better. Their parts professionals have the skills and experience to get you the right parts the first time. Check them out. Action Auto Parts in South Everett, North Linwood, Shoreline, and Green Lake North. Action Auto Parts. Oh, and don't forget the machine shop.
When you hear the rumble of the racetrack, you're listening to NASCAR on North Sound 1380 ESPN Radio.
Pretty single file, but Carl Edwards now rolls to the top of the banking in turn two. Matt Kenseth clinging to the white line on the bottom of the racetrack. Edwards a strong run, and he's closing quickly.
Oh, man, I tell you, that was a really intense first 20 minutes. Welcome back to North Sound Racing, presented by Action Auto Parts. Good to have you with it. If you didn't hear it, I finally got the wherewithal to turn the internet on. So if you people listening on the internet did not hear the big news coming up this afternoon, there's been a change of management and ownership out at Evergreen Speedway. Mickey Beadle is stepping down after 30 years, and Lex Johnson is going to be taking over, starting off the 2008 series out at Evergreen Speedway. And as time goes on, we'll have more information on that. We have it's been crazy. I like this intensity. This adrenaline is just... it's just the best. We have got a lot of guests on the show tonight. Tom Glitherow is in the house, and Tom is expecting a lot of a really in-depth, hardcore, hard-hitting interview, which he knows he's not going to get because we've been doing this for way too long. But I just want Tom to share a couple stories. First of all, Tom, how are you, pal?
I'm not too bad.
Good to have you with us. I know we were going to have you on the opening show, and you had some issues, couldn't make it, but I told you we were going to get you on, and... It's good to see you, man.
Well, I got a haircut, man. I was waiting for the cameras that you said were going to be here tonight.
Oh, that's right. Oh, they're still downstairs. You guys didn't let them in when we came down to get you?
Trust me, there was a whole bunch of us downstairs waiting to get in. You didn't even answer your cell phone when I called, so I know where I rate.
I know. It's just been... Well, we had this deal with Evergreen. What do you... Now, let's talk about Evergreen Speed. What do you think? You've kind of gave you the lowdown when you got in here. Lex Johnson taking over Evergreen Speedway, and Mickey's going to kind of... He'll be hanging around. I don't think you could, you know, really drag Mickey out of that place if you had to. But what do you think about that whole development?
Well, I think it's good. Mickey and the Beadle family have been there a long time, spent a lot of time, energy, money, passion. But I think, you know, maybe it kind of come to the end. And Lex has got a big challenge in front of him. The facility needs, I think, some you know, upgrades, that sort of thing. Hopefully they've got a long enough term contract, as well as Lex having the ability to work with the county, because mm-hmm. I was there for 8 years, and the county sometimes is a little difficult to work for or work with. So and the Beatles, very, very active in the area, politically and all the savvy things that you need to be. Lex has got more than just running a racetrack shoes to fill.
Yeah, it's, and plus he's got his race car business, the concept racing going on, and
obviously he won't
trying
be
to
racing.
Sell parts, build cars, vinyl cars. I mean, it's gonna be a load for him, and I wish him luck.
Well, yeah, too, and I you know, I hope one of the things they do and get back to some big time events and some things that'll put some excitement back in the facility. We were talking a little while ago about, you know, back in the old days when I was there, and you know, the old Motorcraft 500 and long tour races and mm-hmm. 50,000 to win, and you know, the truck races we did, and I know that those days are gone because the trucks have moved on to bigger and better things with NASCAR, but I think hopefully that those things will come back to it, because you know, they were the most fun things to do. They were the things that brought credibility to the Speedway, not only from the press side of the house, the fans, but also the competitors up and down the West Coast knew. You know, we first one to pay $50,000 to win, you know, for a Winston West race at that particular time. We paid $10,000 to win a tour race, had 60 cars there, had a big, huge wreck with a few laps to go, but we had some of the best in the business. Mm-hmm. And those things were fun. You know, back to the days of Bodine and Sterling and, you know, Bill Elliott, who came mm-hmm. out, Davey Allison, one of my personal favorites, you know, and some pretty good stories that happened back in those days.
Tom, the reason I brought you on, I'm going to be straight honest with you. Remember sitting in Shane Biles' motorhome up at the, I believe it was the 360 Nationals or the World of Outlaws. Second day, and we're all in Shane and Renee's motorhome, and I believe you started talking about the IMCA Modified Nationals at Boone, Iowa.
I've heard some of these stories from him, too.
And you get the opportunity, given your position at Long Acre Racing, to travel around to racetracks all over the country. Can you kind of describe what the Modified Nationals at Boone, Iowa is like, please?
Bizarre. It violates every rule that, you know, Galen grew up around racetracks. He's a little younger than me, but, you know, we hung around some of those racetracks, and they violate every rule of every racetrack that I've ever been to in my life. But if you can imagine a week-long event that they run 700 cars through there, the major class, which is the IMCA Modifieds, upwards to 425 cars. So the first night they run, which is Wednesday night, they have about 42 heat races. Mm-hmm. They go into B mains, C mains, A mains, all this sort of stuff. Now, you got all these cars on the racetrack, and you got all these cars in the pits. By the way, it's a dirt track, so after every 10 heat races, they stop and they farm, which is when about 15 pieces of equipment bomb out there, tear it up, you know, water it, pack it down, and do everything else. Mm-hmm. But as you're walking around, you realize that it doesn't make any difference if you're 2 years old or 102. If you can lay your money down, you can buy a pit pass, you can go into the pits. Mm-hmm. Barbecues everywhere. You know, like I said, everybody's on four-wheelers and stuff going on all over. You know, and then after the sun goes down and it gets late at night, it gets really, really bizarre. There's big, huge trailers with stages on them, I guess. I don't stay that late because I'm a happily married man. But apparently there's some things that happen up on
you
those
can
stages.
Tell she's here. He wouldn't say that if he wasn't here. Tom, was it fun?
Gary Lewis said it was fun. So it's
and the alcohol flows.
Well, they sell beer in the pits.
Yeah, that's
they
what you
sell
told me.
Beer in the pits. They have these big old horse troughs, and they sell these big old cans of beer, more than I can drink. And I remember the first time I walked up, and I said, "I'll take two
number
of them."
Two.
And
he's a storyteller.
This girl says, "You know, they're like $2.75 a piece." And I thought, "God, I can afford $5.50." My wife gave me my allowance this week, you know. But it is absolutely the most incredible thing you've ever seen. And it's so well orchestrated, and it's run. And the flagman, who runs the entire show, stands up at the pit meeting and goes, "Okay, here are the rules, boys. You ruin somebody's day, I got to ruin yours." And it's a long walk all the way around from the pits to the grandstand. I'm real busy, so I don't have time to talk to you, so don't even bother walking. Okay, any questions? Let's go racing. And that's it.
Now, did you talk about a bridge? Is there a bridge over the racetrack?
There is a bridge that runs around the racetrack, not over the racetrack, but from turn one to turn four, and it's about 4 feet wide. It's more like a catwalk. And when you get, and I'm not kidding you, there's probably 3,000 people in the grandstand. There's 4,000 or 5,000 people in the pits. Mm-hmm. No lie. And everybody's standing up on this catwalk, and it's wiggling like you're scared, right?
Like you had a couple of those beers.
Well, and I'm standing up there one time, and this person next to me said, "Hey, would you like something to drink?" And I said, "Well, okay." And they opened up their cooler, two kinds of beer. They had vodka and Jack Daniels in there. And this is in the pit area. And it's the first time I've ever seen here the chief mechanic or crew chief says, "Here, hold my beer while I put the race car back together for you."
You know, I was at Portland one time, Tom, and it kind of reminds me of, I remember getting on the radio and telling Chuck when I drove for Chuck, "I've never been to a racetrack where the beer garden, everybody in the stands is sitting at the bottom and towards the middle where the beer garden was." I've never seen that anywhere but Portland, but it sounds a lot like that.
Well, and so this one guy says to me, "Hey, would you like to go up to the VIP area?" So, you know, I like nice, plush, cushy places. So we go up these wooden stairs, right? And it's a old mobile home up on wooden stilts.
Uh-huh.
Swear to God, not lying. They've gutted it out. They've bought some cheap old seats out of a movie theater, plopped them in there, and there everybody is. You know, all the trophy queens and all the race sponsors and everything else. And this mobile home's kind of tilted off in the back, you know. And I said to somebody, I said, "Man, I'm kind of thirsty." And they said, "Well, go down there and that girl will take care of you." So I got down there and I said, "I'd like something to drink." And she said, "What would you like?" And I said, "Well, what do you have?" She said, "Well, I've got Jack Daniels and I got vodka." I said, "Yeah, you know." And so, okay. She takes out a big gulp cup, fills it full of ice, and then starts pouring Jack in there till I'm like, "Woo, mixer, you know, mixer." Uh-huh. And she hits it with a splash of 7-Up and says, I'm short of mixer tonight, so here you go. Two drinks later, the movie theater up on stilts, VIP area, it's now level as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
What other type of tracks do you get to, I mean, you have your pick of where you want to go, but it depends on where you're at and what Longacre has sent for you to do. But tell me your favorite track that you've been to. And you may just have.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you. I'm a Saturday night short track guy. Mm-hmm. You can take Daytona, and if I never go back there again, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't like the city. I don't like 200,000 people. I don't like racetracks where they look like little matchbox cars going down the backstretch. And of course, Daytona, you know, for the 500, all the beautiful people are there, and they don't really care about racing, but they're there because it's what you got to do. So, but by far, I went to Bristol, had the opportunity to spot for a Craftsman Truck Series team for a year. Went to Bristol, did a night event at Bristol, and holy crap is all I can tell you. The whole thing from where I was from a spotter standpoint, to, you know, which was so high up I thought I was going to pass out, to you know, I happened to be there with Toby Butler, and when Butler headed off into turn one by me, and you look through the right side window of a pickup truck and you can see his left leg, you know that baby's, you know, banked and stuff. So by far and away, my favorite racetrack would have to be Bristol. Been to Richmond, been to Indy, been to IRP, been to lots of those racetracks, yeah, up and down the West Coast. And I love anything that's dirt. Manzanita, non-wing, 410 sprint cars, probably my favorite show.
Before we get to Galen's question, mm-hmm, the same feeling you had at Bristol was the same feeling you probably had up in the VIP place at Boone, right?
No.
Okay. Go ahead, Galen.
Curious, Tom, if you've had an opportunity to either be at or get, excuse me, is it the Lucas Oil, the gentleman that owns Lucas Oil, does he own a track in Missouri or something?
He does own a racetrack. I have not been to it. Apparently, it's kind of like the Cadillac of you know, Saturday night short tracks. But, you know, the one thing that I like about short tracks, and the one thing I hope, you know, we see it at Evergreen with the change in management, is passion and excitement, and a racetrack where people are excited. And I think one of the things that's hurting Saturday night short track racing is it's too vanilla. Mm-hmm. It's everybody's trying to emulate Sunday, and that's not what it is, and that's, mm-hmm, not what it needs to be. And I have an expression: you need good guys and bad guys. You just need to somehow keep them out of the ditches. And if you can control them and let them play in between those two ditches of the road, I think it'd be really cool. And it needs to kind of go back a little bit to the olden days where the racers took care of each other.
I warned you a little bit before we went on the air, Tom, that I was going to ask you a question, and this kind of leads right into this question, and that is, in the position you're in at Longacre, I think that you may have an opportunity that some of us don't have, and that is to get the heartbeat of what exactly is going on in motorsports and where we're headed with, you know, the parts and equipment that you sell. Where are we headed over the next year or maybe two?
Well, you're right. I get an opportunity to talk to a lot of vendors who sell parts at the racetrack, like Lex does, racetrack operators, sanctioning bodies, that sort of thing. And there's no doubt that racing's down a little bit. Discretionary income's not there. You know, people are nervous. I think they're twitchy. They're just waiting for the next plane to fly into a building. And I think that's hurting it. You know, and I just talked to a track operator up in the New England area who says, He's kind of excited about $4 a gallon gas because he thinks people are going to stay home. But I do believe that cost containment racing is where it's at. IMCA, you know, does a very, very good job. That's the reason they get 425 cars who race for $1,500 to win, and they're there for a flipping week.
Wow.
You know, but it's good, it's clean, it's hard racing, and somehow we got to get the costs under control. We got to get some excitement and passion back into it. You know, and I'll say it this way, we need less Mark Martins, and we need more Tony Stewarts and Robbie, mm-hmm, Gordons and those kinds of people, and nothing against Mark Martin, but Saturday night short track racing needs color.
Yeah. As we wrap up our time with Tom Guthrie, and you're going to be back because you could do 2 hours with you, and I want to do that someday. What's some advice for Lex when he's coming up?
I'm not a very religious man, but God, go to church or something. I think the things you got to do, you got to mean what you say, do what you say you're going to do, and not waver. And mm-hmm. a guy told me a long time ago, if 51% of the racers like you, you're doing a great job. And it's a very, very difficult business. I think people don't really understand it. But I think that got to stand firm. You got to stand tall. You can't dodge the bullets every once in a while. You got to take them. I had a guy once tell me that I was the biggest.
Are we going to use the beep button here?
Beep button, yeah.
No.
He thought that's what I was because I fought him on every panel that they tried to piece of tin they tried to put in a bomber car back when Galen was racing. But he kind of understands now why, because bombers have gotten so expensive that he can't even afford it now. He went from bombers, late model, back to bombers, and still couldn't afford it. And so I think they got to get the rules under control, do what they say they're going to do, put some passion back in it, and Lex hopefully will make some money.
Well, we hope so. You're a golfer, fanatic, right? You like to play golf?
God, no. My life's got enough trouble without golf. No thanks.
You ever heard of a golfer by the name of Boo Wheatley?
I thought he drove sprint cars up at
Modifieds at Boone.
Modifieds at Boone, yeah.
I thought he was Steve Beitler's favorite driver.
He was also the architect of the VIP place up there.
Yeah.
Boo Wheatley, we did an interview on 3-6 with the Fish about a week and a half ago, and Boo Wheatley apparently is like the Larry the Cable Guy of the PGA Tour. And I want you to listen to this as we go into the next break. First of all, Tom, thank you so much for coming up. I wish we had more time, but we kind of got packed in tonight, and we've got more for you later on down the road, my friend.
Not a problem. I've got some pretty darn... We were just talking about some of the stories outside that happened during my little tenure, from threatening to get whooped to, NASCAR Cup guys going home when I'd sold lots of tickets based on them being there. And I found out who had all the yank in NASCAR. And it's a pretty good story. I'll tell it someday.
All right. Okay. We'll have you back on. Thank you very so much, Tom. We're going to go into this break with an excerpt from 3-6 from the Fish from about a week ago. Boo Wheatley is, I think, ranked 14th on the PGA Tour. And Jeff and Boo Wheatley got into some NASCAR conversation. When we come back, we'll visit with Rob Estes, the manager of Action Machines, right after this. You're listening to North Sound Racing, presented by Action Auto Parts and Machine on North Sound 1380. Check this out.
We had NASCAR on today because it was rain delayed.
Who won that, by the way?
Carl Edwards.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised because NASCAR is kind of like, when you take the top 30, 20 guys out there, it's kind of like the top 20 guys on the PGA Tour. You know, any one of us can win.
Right.
So, it's...
Are you a NASCAR fan?
I am, sir.
Okay, then you're more qualified than anybody I've asked this question to today. If every car were exactly the same, exact power, exact handling, no, everything, the setup is exactly the same... Who's the best driver? Because we know...
I'm an Earnhardt man, so...
But he's not the best driver, is he?
I ain't going to say he's the best driver, but I'm an Earnhardt man, but if everything was exactly the same, I'd have to say Jeff Gordon.
If I told you, Boo Wheatley, pro golfer, you have one driver in today's race, all 20 cars, they're all exactly equal... And your life is on the line. What driver would you pick? You wouldn't take Dale Earnhardt Jr.
No, sir. I'd probably take...
You'd take Tony Stewart or Jimmy Johnson.
I wouldn't take no Tony Stewart for nothing. That Tony Stewart, I tell you what, he's very interesting. I'm going to leave it at that. I mean, I know him and Junior. They're friends and everything, but I'm being serious. I think Jeff Gordon's probably he's probably the top driver out there.
All right, I'd have no problems you taking Jeff Gordon, but you're not going to win the race with Dale Jr. And I'm not a big expert in racing or anything, but NASCAR's a funny sport to me. In golf, you guys are all individuals. You're out there playing, and if you don't win, you can really only blame yourself. In NASCAR, if they don't win, well, they can blame the crew chief, they can blame their car, they can blame a flat tire, they can blame it on a lot of things. But I often wondered, who really is the best, who's the most talented driver out there? And no one really knows.
Well, you can't pick just one talented driver, because like you said, you got so many different, the cars are so different. mean, you can say they can say what they want about it. They got the same setup, they got the same motor, they got the same everything. I'm telling you, that ain't the truth. That's just like if you went down and bought the same vehicle at a car lot. It's the same exact vehicle. My honey hurts.
Well, you have to answer a hypothetical question every.